podcasting from Alexandria, Virginia, just a few miles from Washington, D.C., where we all hope doing what is right the first time is everyone's top priority. This is Software Quality Today, presented by Procellarex, a podcast about the trends and challenges of software quality testing and computerized system validation, and the people who are leading the way. Hear interviews with special guests and news from customers and vendors. I'm your host, Dori Gonzalez-Acevedo, and welcome to today's episode. Welcome to another episode of Software Quality Today. I'm your host, Dori Gonzalez-Acevedo. I'm excited to share with you my lively conversation today with Steve Curry. Steve is the founder and CEO of Mustard Seed. Mustard Seed provides project management services to life science companies. I've had the pleasure to work with some of Steve's PMs, and it's refreshing to have such skilled and forward-thinking folks navigate complex enterprise projects. Steve has a passion and calling to help lead projects, programs, teams, and businesses alike to tremendous success by increasing their maximum potential of operating efficiency through utilization of program management best practices. He's equally passionate about communicating with clients when project risks and issues arise. It comes from Steve's extensive experience and background in managing projects and programs of all sizes, and his experience in finance, sales, business analysis, and management. Steve had the benefit of working in PMOs in four different industries, having spent nearly 20 years in the field, has dedicated himself to collecting, organizing, compiling, and implementing today's best PM practices. Without further ado, Steve Curry. Well, welcome, Steve. Thanks for joining me on an episode of Software Quality Today.
Of course, it's my pleasure to be here. Thanks for taking the time.
Yeah. Well, everyone, we have Steve Curry today from Mustard Seed, CEO and founder. And Steve and I have been working together for almost a year now, helping source some projects and project management roles that I've led. And I'm happy to have him here today to give a good talk with you about some basic principles in project management, some trends and things that are going on in the industry. And I thought he would be really interesting to chat with. So with that, I would like to welcome, Steve. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. Thanks, Dori. So I'm a professional project and program manager. I've spent my entire career, nearly 20 years, managing projects at four different industries and five different companies now. So I founded Mustard Seed a little over a year ago with the idea that project management needs to be elevated within the life sciences. Some of the program management best practices that are common in aerospace and tech and construction really aren't universally applied within the scientific community. And given the global pandemic, it seemed like the right time to start the company and help out the scientific community with something that, in my view, was desperately needed. So it's a really exciting time to be in the scientific community, and we just try and help where we can. So it's great to be on the podcast today and share some knowledge and be a part of this community.
Great. One of the things that really draw me to you when we started thinking about working together was your business model, right? And really the added value of bringing PMs that had broader experience than others that I've seen in the community. So can you tell me a little bit about how you recruit for that?
Yeah, great point. So, when I hire project managers, it's really all about leadership. It starts and ends with that. So I'm laser focused on finding people that can get things done and that others like to be a part of their teams. And so I found when I spent about 6 years prior to starting Mustard Seed working in the life sciences, supporting big pharmaceutical companies, particularly around their lab operations. And what I found was that it's very difficult to break into a life science company if you don't have a scientific background. And I think that's a common mistake that a lot of companies make when they're hiring project managers, because, lifelong learners want to learn, their subject. They want to learn their new job. And if you find the right person who's always leaning forward, who's a leader, who is easy to get along with, people like them, they're smart, it's very easy for them to pick up the subject matter within your company and with your client base. And so oftentimes there's an assumption that that takes, you know, too long. It takes years, and it might take years to master it, certainly. But to be quite proficient, it might take much less time than that. And at the same time, you've opened yourself up to a entirely more broad base of project management professionals.
So what do you see as the role of a PM or a program management?
Yeah, I see the role as kind of a few things. One, you need to be a leader and be constantly trying to accomplish things, right? Your goal is to deliver upon the scope of work. And so leadership is certainly number one, but communication. You need to communicate out, both out to your team, the individuals who are the subject matter experts getting the work done. We need to be able to communicate out to peers and up through leadership and executive management. So how you communicate, not just like you and me are talking through words, but also how do you structure emails and how often you send those emails. And do you give two sentences or do you give five slides in a PowerPoint presentation? You know, as humans, we're really visual creatures. So I've always been a big believer that the more visuals you can show to kind of paint that picture, the better. So metrics and KPIs really become super important.
Yeah. So I'm shaking and nodding my head as you say that, because one of the things I struggle with as a PM and program management for many years is getting my customer to remember what they've agreed to. Right. And so one of my gaps is those emails that you were talking about, right? Really being articulate with them. I can articulate verbally really well, but articulating via email is hard for me. So I can see how, you know, when one of the things that you're saying is the combination of all of those things, right, in conjunction together paints a bigger picture, right? A fuller picture.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you bring up a great point about making sure everyone's on the same page in an electronic fashion. when I started my career, it was in the construction industry, and we used to send faxes because mm-hmm. you had to have some sort of paper trail, and the folks we dealt with didn't always have email. So, yeah. However you can get it down on paper electronically is very important, because you always have that in your back pocket that you can go back to it. Absolutely.
Yeah. And then I also find learning styles is really different for different people, right? And so it's interesting what you were saying about when you're starting. When I started a manufacturing floor. I was a chemical process engineer, right? And every shift change, there were two shift changes because we did 12-hour shifts, right? Every shift change, we would all sit together and we would go through the list of everything that was running, right? And for me, that's just kind of how I was brought up in this industry, right? And so that's kind of normal. And when I think about some of the we'll get into like the Scrum principles and stuff like that, like, but that's just the way I'm wired, right? Like mm-hmm. I'm used to verbal, you know, sit downs, talk through and move on through my day. I know my day, right? Not for the same for everybody.
That's very true. And you know, those early jobs you have in your career really influence how you see the problems you deal with at work.
Right.
I'm influenced in much the same way, where, you know, I'd much rather have a conversation about it, because you and I can solve something in about 4 minutes that we can solve an email in 4 days with probably a combination of 90 minutes of email right. time between the two of us. Right. And the 5-minute conversation is much more pleasant,
right? Because and more cost effective. Like when I think right. about all the dollars that go into back and forth and emailing, it drives me a little bit crazy. Because that 2-minute conversation, we can get a lot done. And also, I know through COVID, it's been hard in this virtual world, right, where many folks have had to do this now, you know, in a different way that they're not normally used to. And that also posed a lot of challenges, all opportunities, right? But at the same time, new learning for everybody.
Yeah. And picking up the phone or just, you know, scheduling 10 minutes on Zoom, whatever you prefer. It's, you know, the phone call these days is almost like a lost art. It's kind of like a handwritten note.
Right.
You just don't.
And then
see
there's
it
texting.
Anymore.
So I get, you know, individual texts from customers too now, right? So now it's like they have another avenue to get at. First it was the email they can get me. Now it's through to my personal cell phone, which is challenging. I can't even communicate with my husband over text. I don't think I do very well with a customer over text.
That's right. So you're right. The communication method is super critical, and the cadence as well. So your meetings in the factory were every day or twice daily, and that was super critical for you to do. And so some people might say, well, that's a lot of meetings. You know, people get bogged down by that. But what it does is it makes sure that if you have a thought that pops in your head that you need to communicate with people, you don't send an email away to 5-10 individuals. You save it for that meeting and you can get it answered like that, right? So there are meetings that end other lines of communication, and I find those meetings to be the most impactful. So, you know, weekly project management meetings, for instance, if everyone takes them seriously and brings to the meeting items that have come up throughout the week, that's a really valuable use of everyone's time. Is that hour or that 2 hours, whatever it's designated.
Yeah. So if we switch to the methodologies here, because I think one of the things I'd like to talk to you a little bit about, and we've talked about in the past around moving to an agile PM sort of way of being as a methodology, as a philosophy, kind of getting out of the traditional waterfall ways of running projects. We all know in life sciences that's been very historic, right? In a very waterfall way of either CSV or other things, right? But it's just a very transactional sort of way of being, and moving to a more agile fashion of project management and program management. What has your experience been in exploring this?
Yeah, great question. And it's one that a lot of people are asking now, especially with, you know, the different software tools available for project managers. It used to be 15 years ago, it's Microsoft Project, and that's about all it is, unless you work at a company that has, you know, thousands of lines of schedule, and then you might get into something like Primavera's P6. But even that is very similar to Microsoft Project. And all those have traditionally come with a waterfall approach. So, you know, in the last 10 years or so, there's been this movement towards agile projects, particularly around software development. And I think for software development projects, an agile approach is really something that folks should consider because of the nature of the work. If you have fixed deliverables over a fixed period of time, I'm always more of a traditionalist where I would lean towards a waterfall approach. But you have to be open to the agile approach as well. And just because you're managing it as a waterfall doesn't mean you can't also look at it in an agile viewpoint. So software tools today, Smartsheet.com, and there's so many others, you can, with a click of a button, toggle between your waterfall schedule to a Kanban board or a planning board with dates. And I think those visuals are really important for folks to realize, because it's not always a beautiful visual if it's a Gantt chart, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's critical for folks to look at all options with that respect. And then Scrum meetings. So Scrum and Agile kind of get mixed together sometimes, but Scrum meetings to me are let's just meet really often. That's what it is. And you used to have those meetings in your factory, and we used to call them daily stand-ups. But Scrum meetings are all about getting the team together every day. Generally, sometimes twice a day, three times a day, and working out details in a really fast format. The alternative would be occasional meetings or figure it out via email, but those are much, much slower. So a Scrum approach I'm a huge fan of, in the sense that we need to get folks together and get them talking.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like what you're saying, because it actually circles back to your original points around leadership. Right. so leadership, communication, and that constant feedback loop, right? And if we're not meeting regularly, if we're not all talking the same language, doesn't matter what approach we're using, whether it be waterfall or agile, like the tasks that need to get done or need to be understood or prioritized are not getting that constant attention. I know that is one of the things that working with complex teams, if we have customers and we have external parties, and sometimes we have teams that, you know, could be at least, you know, three or four different organizations working together, right? That you have to synchronize across lots of different demands and needs, and how to do that effectively is hard. So while I think agile in the software development space, that's kind of like the easy win, right? Using a more of an agile program management perspective in more complex programs, I think can add a lot of value.
Absolutely. And there's a significant number of life science organizations that are moving towards agile. It's mm-hmm. just critical for what they do. So it's important to build a team of project management professionals that have different experiences, right? Because if you have an entire organization that's just done waterfall project management before, they're not going to be open to the suggestion. They may not be open to suggestions for an agile approach. So I'd encourage those that are a part of project management organizations or hiring project managers to get folks with varying skills and varying experience, because it really is critical to look at it from every angle. And just because one PM hasn't been able to successfully manage an agile project in that way doesn't mean it can't be done. So it's always good to share ideas mm-hmm. and best practices in that way.
Yeah. So it's almost like having a scrum of scrums, right? Like you want to, you also want to manage your PMs in such a way that they know that they have access to other ways of thinking, right? I also often see in life science, the big ones where they're so siloed, right? PMs are off by themselves, right? Working on a year long project or more, right? And no access to others within the PMO office because they're just so overburdened with whatever. And the task lists are long for them and could be lonesome.
Absolutely. And that becomes problematic, right? Because that individual isn't staying current with the rest of the team and some of the best practices and that they're involved with. And some of the tools they're utilizing, and they just become laser focused on supporting the team and their client, which is super important. But it's also nice to take a step back and to share ideas and best practices.
Yeah.
Because the industry does change.
It does. It really does. And I think that, you know, COVID has illustrated that, and it's whether or not we want as an industry to capitalize on the lessons of COVID, right? I mean, one of the things we've all had to done is pivot and learn how to pivot well and prioritize, look at risks. One of the things I've talked about a lot on this podcast is about folks not understanding risk enough and really being willing to have those nuanced conversations about risk. Anything around risk management that you give as best practices for your PMs?
Yeah, it's a great point because risk management is so often overlooked within the industry, right? We talk so much about the schedule and how are we meeting the schedule, and can you show me, you know, a KPI that matters too? But risk management is critical to managing projects. You have to do it. So the question is just how often and how detailed. My experience, you know, depending on the type of project, the project manager should be at least capturing those risks in Excel. You could do something basic like Excel, but a lot of the project management tools today have risk management options. And it's best to look not just at the risks, but the issues and opportunities. So issues are realized risks. And opportunities are the inverse of risks, and that they're positive, right? You have an opportunity to do something really good. So in terms of risk management, I think you have to really quantify it and manage it on a weekly basis. So you may meet less frequent than weekly, but the project manager needs to constantly be asking those questions and in those scrum meetings and weekly project management meetings. What are our risks here? Or there's a conversation going on the side. That sounds like a risk. Let's capture that. You don't have to give me all the details, but we're going to note it and we'll talk about it on Thursday at our risk meeting. Those are the sorts of things that they don't cost that much time, but they make a huge difference over the period of a project. And I'm sure you've seen that time and time again throughout your career. And the last thing I'll say about risks that isn't generally well done, but it's fairly simple to do, is to communicate them and communicate them to leadership, because you can't manage secrets. And so executive leadership is always looking to the project management team to manage the project, but also to escalate those risks, because so often they may exist in more than one location. So those risks, although they may seem simple to an individual project manager, if there are a team of project managers with the same risk, you may have more luck and success mitigating those risks, because you'll get the executive sponsorship to do that quicker.
So part of what you're saying is also, as you're assessing that risk and escalating that, at some point there has to be a decision made based on that risk. Any tips or thoughts about that, how to get an actual decision made based off of the risks that you guys have evaluated?
Yeah, what I've seen work well is once a risk is identified, the risk owner should be able to put a plan together to mitigate the risk, right? And if they can't mitigate the risk, then it becomes an issue because it's unmitigatable, or it can just go into the category of accepted risk, right? But generally speaking, you should be able to mitigate those risks so that they're not as severe if they do become issues. So a detailed plan is really important, and it doesn't have to be anything elaborate, but something as simple as, these are the five steps I'm going to take, and here are the dates I'm going to meet those deadlines to mitigate that risk and to eliminate it or reduce it. And then the project manager can decide those risks for the project, those steps. The steps to mitigate the risk should go into the schedule, or we're going to manage them separately. But either way, there should be a tracker in place for risks and the dates as you step those down from risk severity 5. And once I complete this milestone next Friday, that reduces that severity from a 5 down to a 4. And I do the next step and it reduces it to a 3. So really it's a common misconception to lay out those steps in such a detailed way. But if you think about it, that's what has to get done either way, whether you write it down formally or not. The only way to mitigate the risk is to have some leadership and actively mitigate it.
Mm-hmm. One other point, when you were saying that, I thought interesting. So also what you're prescribing is a metric, formula to measure risk, and I don't see that often in a lot of the customers that I work with, right? So can you tell me a little bit about that, because I think metrics are an important part here.
Yeah, exactly. Generally, it's severity and impact. So you go on a scale of 1 to 5. What's the severity? What's the impact? And so, the worst case risk would have a severity of a 5 and an impact of a 5. And so that total risk would be 5 times 5, 25, if you were to metricize it. But also you could see it in a grid format. So if you summarize, if you're a large project, you might want to put something like this together, and there's templates online you could find in Excel, but it's basically a 5x5 matrix that is kind of green in the bottom left and red in the top right and yellow in between, where it's, severity and impact on the X and Y axis. And you would, have a dot for each risk in that category. And so at a summary level, you'd be able to see, okay, this project doesn't have any really bad risks that we need to worry about today. Or, it does. And on an individual project level, that's important as a project manager. But if you're leading a project management organization, if you're leading an IT organization, if you're leading a company, you may want to think about that sort of a roll-up and format for your organization, because it really provides the visibility in a simplistic way to all the different risks that are going on within a program.
Great. Thanks for that. That also comes back around to KPIs, I guess, as one of the things that I did want to talk to you about, because I was listening to another podcast this weekend, and someone was saying about they came in and it was like 30 KPIs, and they're like, what does this even mean? You know, and I was like, that's a great question. Like, so what are some of your recommendations around KPIs around project management?
Yeah, KPIs I find are really important, but they're really important if people understand what they mean, just like you said. And I could show you a whole bunch of KPIs that mean a lot to me and not much to you. So it's really taking a bottoms up approach to the organization and the KPIs that you utilize. So if you have an internal project management office, what are the KPIs we've always used? Do people understand them? If they do, we should try and refine them a little bit, maybe. But that's a good place to start. What doesn't really work well is parachuting in a new approach that no one's seen before, and you rip the old one out and put the new one in and say, these are your new KPIs. I hope you like them. That generally does not work. So I would say, you know, the KPIs that are really most effective are the ones that people understand. And you can start small. Say, look, we want to build out KPIs. Here are the first five we're going to introduce. Let's get buy-in on them. Let's tweak them as needed, but let's start small and get agreement. And once we're all comfortable with these, we can introduce some more. But so, it's really about gaining that momentum.
But I think the part of the key, I wonder if you think about this, is the bottom-up versus the top-down approach to what those even mean, right? So getting the buy-in from the people that do day-to-day work, right, I think is, in my opinion, more critical than what an upper management folks think that should be measured. And this needing to be a more transparent, or even listening to the day-to-day worker to understand the true pain points. I'm a firm believer in gamble walks, and right, really like walking in the shoes and understanding as a leader, because if you don't, I don't know what we're really trying to accomplish. And at the end of the day, they're people doing this, right?
Yeah, it's a great point. And sometimes there's a few layers between the subject matter experts that are doing the work and have to provide status that feeds those KPIs, and those individuals who are looking at those KPIs and metrics. And so I totally agree with your sentiment. You know, gamble walks, having executive leadership sit with subject matter experts while we collectively agree on KPIs, that's certainly a best practice that that is recommended.
So I know that there's a lot of new tools out there. Are there things that you look for in setting up a program, more or less? Do tools even come into play, or do you think about other things first? How do you think about setting up a PMO?
Yeah. I think within a PMO, the tools are important, but I'd probably put them third. You know, the right people, I've always found, is most important. And then it's really the processes that you put in place. So we're talking about risks, just agreeing that risks are important for your organization to manage, I think, is an important step. And once you have those people and you agree on what's important with your processes, I would look at the software to kind of help with the communication and the management of all of that. And it's easier now than it ever has been to get lost in which project management software to use. I'm glad you're laughing, because I went down this deep dive to find the perfect project management solution. And 47 software packages later, I was still scratching my head.
So this is a big pet peeve of me on all tool front, right? Like, tools are tools, right? Mm-hmm. It's what you want to do with them and whether or not you use them, right? I was just doing internal training on my team for Agile, and, you know, Microsoft Excel has 40,000 plus features, right? How many do we use on an average day-to-day basis, right? Seriously. And so it is only as good as what we do. I love that there's lots of tools out there. No one, you have to find the right one that works for you, right?
That's right. And so you have to really define what it is you want out of your project management software, or else you will get lost very quickly in the sea of options that you have.
I think this is a really big learning. Just I want to just hone in on this for 1 second, because understanding what you want, I think that's the fundamental message, if anything we can ever get out on this podcast, is you need to understand what you want out of a tool in order to be able to use the tool. It's really important. Not enough of us spend time thinking about that. It's a painful conversation, I think, for some people.
It's very true. And I bet if you were to go back to your first job, you had rudimentary tools, might have been a pen and paper. At my first project management role, it was pencil and paper. Mm-hmm. And the team did a great job with pencil and paper because it was the right people and the right process.
A whiteboard. That's all we had. We had a whiteboard. We drew, you know, 10 reactor trains on the whiteboard, and we tracked them every day. That was, you know, it worked, because that's the goal. We just needed to know that information, right? So what is the goal? What is the actual intended use of what you want to do? A lot of these tools have gotten really powerful, right?
Yeah, they're really powerful. And when you first start to look at them, they're all kind of similar. Mm-hmm. But then you start to realize that there are many that are quite different, and the price points are different too. But yeah, listing the requirements as specifically as you can really is critical. I went into looking at the software packages with what I thought was a pretty defined list of requirements. And then I realized it needed to be even more detailed because of how many options there are out there. So I would just encourage folks to understand that the journey to find the right software for your projects may take a while if you're going to look at so many options, but there's a lot of good project management tools out there. And, you know, find out what's important to you. Is it I need to manage a schedule, but I also want to manage risks. I need to communicate out to my team, so we need to share information, share status, also communicate up through leadership. Really list out what those are. It also really matters how big your schedules are. So I would say if your schedules are going to be over 1,000 line items long, 95% of those project management software packages probably aren't for you. But most people manage schedules that are 1,000 lines or less. So the majority of the project management software packages would generally be acceptable. So it really is critical to understand specifically your use case for your company. And that you also may need more than one software package depending on how complex your work is.
Let's talk about that detailed work breakdown structure you're just talking about. I cringe when you said 1,000 lines. I personally like to do more on the milestone basis and leave more flexibility within the team to be able to manage their day-to-day task. That's just mine. I don't like to micromanage. I try my best not to. I'm sure I've been accused of as well on both sides. But so what is that balance? How much should you really get into your project plans?
Yeah, great question. The general guidance on duration and hours for a task or a line item, as I just referenced, would be, you know, 2 weeks or less. And generally 8 hours or more. So I think you could still accomplish what you're describing, not micromanaging someone's work, if you gave them a 10 working day task, right? Mm-hmm. You wouldn't be in the day-to-day details, but you know at the end they would accomplish X. And so how they do it is up to them. And so there are a lot of companies, you know, drug development perhaps may have a 3-year program. Well, a 3-year program is likely to have, you know, a couple thousand lines if you detail it down to the 1 to 2 week work package level. And so at one point in my career, I had a 50,000 line schedule that I was managing. And every single week I had to run a critical path chart, you know, top 5, top 10 critical paths to each of those milestones. And so that level of detailed scheduling requires specific software. But these days it's much more of a collaborative work environment. I would encourage everyone to think about the role of the project manager, right? A lot of the software packages today make project management a team sport. And we have project managers so that subject matter experts don't have to project manage. And so when you're picking your software package, when you're developing your project management team, think about that. Do I want my lead scientist or my IT person really spending their time in Monday.com updating status and moving things around? Maybe. But maybe not. Maybe you want the project manager to own that schedule. And the only thing they rely on the subject matter experts for is status. How did you do today? How did you do this week? And that's what I've seen work really well, is the role of the project manager gives back time to those on the team, because that's a large part of their role.
Yeah, I find that when that's done well, it works really, really well. And I think that takes a lot more time than one thinks. I think this is part of the mindset that I'd like to see shift, is, you know, PM, true PMing in the way that you've described it, have a more essential role in a team and not just thought of as, oh, just 10% or 20% of the total time. It's actually a full-time job. And keeping up on that when you're utilizing your SMEs in that way, because there's a lot of other background stuff that you have to go and put together and piece together and make sense of. And you might have to reach out to 5 different people in order to understand everything that's going on together. And and then do the communication and make sure that everyone's aware of all of that, right? Like, there is a lot of maintenance that goes behind the scenes that I think is underappreciated, undervalued, and often shortchanged in life science.
Yeah. You're absolutely right. And that's, and sometimes we get into the situation where we have these project managers who aren't trained as project managers. They're very good at their, you know, their SME role, and they are excellent communicators. So they get put into a PM role. So all of a sudden they're an accidental PM. And if that's what they want to do with their career, that's terrific. You know, and they can go down the career path of training and things like that. But so often those folks are uncomfortable in those situations and actually really liked the subject matter expert role that they were in before. So it is critical to make sure that you're intentional about who's fulfilling those project management duties, because if it's PM by committee, if it's 10% of the total SME hours and everyone does it, or if it's the project manager, but still everybody does it, that can lead to some culture issues and some folks that are not as happy in their role as they could be if they were just left to do their work. So I think of a large part of what makes a PM successful is, you know, kind of like an iceberg. You see on top the 5, 10%, but the majority of it is below the sea. And that's what a good PM does, is take the information in that meeting, but then you spend an hour or two digesting it, disseminating it to the team, communicating it out. Really, a lot of that work is done on an individual basis because you're not taking the time of others when you do it.
I also think that there needs to be the authority that goes with that, right? And what I mean by that is I often also see PMs in a variety of roles and organizations not have influence or the ability to influence direction that is needed, even though the collective may be saying, oh yeah, this is a risk over here, but then there's a bigger risk over here. And the PM for whatever, you know, variety of reasons, not necessarily have the authority to then say, okay, we need to shift and move over here. And I'm wondering how this plays into with an agile framework where there's, if we do agile project management, right, there's a product owner, if you will, right, that should call the shots and should provide the direction of the roadmap, right? But what is the role of a PM in an agile framework?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great question. When you have those product owners, it's critical for the project manager to work closely with them. And it's a matrix organization, most likely. That's how most organizations are now. And so the project manager is responsible for delivering without the authority or, you know, the direct employees underneath him or her. And so I think it is critical to have a structure within your company so that a project manager can operate within a matrix organization, but the culture is such that the project manager can raise their hand and say, I need help. Product manager, executive leadership, I have something here that I can't solve myself. And that needs to be looked at as a strength rather than a weakness, mm-hmm. right? And an organization that has people raising their hands for help is a very healthy organization. And so I would just encourage folks to you know, it's not easy to do. It's easy to say, but to continue to have project managers who are comfortable raising their hands to ask for help, and product managers, executive leaders that are always looking for those hands to be raised so that they can jump in and assist.
It's really important, and I completely agree with you. And it's hard to get everyone to be on the same page, especially when you have multiple organizations all playing those roles sometimes. One of the things when you were talking also made me think of the, in terms of how many projects should a single PM kind of manage versus the size of the project? Is there a way in which you balance that? How do you think about that?
Yeah, it really depends on the type of project. I've seen as many SMEs to project manager as, you know, maybe 20 to 1, 30 to 1, 30 SMEs to 1 PM. But I've seen some projects that, you know, require those daily scrum meetings, and they're super fast in nature. Maybe they're on the IT end that are probably closer to 5 to 1 or 6 to 1 SMEs to project manager. So it depends largely on what you're focused on, what your deliverables are, your scope of work, and then how autonomous the team is. So the structure of that project manager, is it project management by committee, but you have a PM, or is it project manager is really managing quite a bit? And so all those factors play into it. But I'd also encourage folks to think about project management in a non-binary way. Oftentimes within your organization, you can find a partial project manager. And so it's not all or nothing. And the earlier you get a project manager involved, the less you may need them over time. A lot of times project managers brought in to rescue a project. Mm-hmm. But if there's a project manager who properly scopes it up front before a contract is signed, before the project is kicked off, a lot of times you can mitigate the need to project rescue. And so your overall PM hours would be less. Mm-hmm.
So when you look towards the next couple of years, are there any trends or things that you see in the industry that that you guys are prepping for, or in terms of, like, you know, maybe changing how you do things from a PM perspective?
Yeah, I think the evolution of Agile is certainly going to continue. I think you bring up a great topic there. And so the next few years, I think the majority of the change will be in that area, but also the software that accompanies that. I don't think the software packages that are available today are done. Those are SaaS-based businesses that are always going to continue to, you know, look to improve. So you probably will see some consolidation in that industry. You know, I mentioned 47 different software options today. I think that'll be less in 5 years, but there'll be some clear winners there. But I would like the industry to get, you know, more back to basics, more back to the best practices. You brought up risk management, but, you know, a complete integrated master schedule, change management, change control. That is so often overlooked. Mm-hmm. Maybe not in your world as much as I've seen elsewhere, but it's very often overlooked. And then we don't do a whole lot of earned value management in life sciences, but for large programs, you know, EVM or EVM light, as it's sometimes referred to, if you kind of do EVM.
Tell me more about that.
That can really be beneficial. Yeah, earned value management, basically just, you know, keeping track of time of each SME and making that time they spent, you know, better cost accounting with that, but also gives you a percent complete you can measure and roll up quite easily. Those are things that are infrastructure changes for a lot of organizations to implement that. I'm not going to say it's easy to do, but for large organizations or ones that you really need to keep track of your costs and knowing the exact percent complete might be important to you. Those sorts of things should certainly be considered.
Yeah, it's interesting because one of the things I get asked a lot of when I'm engaging with someone was, how much time is my team really going to have to spend with you, right? It's almost like trying to, and you know, and it's not like they're not spending a lot of money. They're spending money for something that they say that they want. And then it's like, how much do I really have to get away with? Like, is it 5% of my time? But, you know, like, and it leads me to think, you know, one is I know we're, a lot of us are short on time and resources, right? And so everyone's trying to do with what they have. But it also, I see that tied intimately to the quality and the output of things that they want to produce, right? And so if you're wanting to engage in a program and do a true transformation in agile, right? Software testing, for example, there's a lot of things that have to go into that transformation other than hiring a consultant or a company to come in and give you the tools to do that, right? And so when I look at agile PMing, right, I look at it at a much broader level to things that you've pointed out, like the change management and how do we do that? How do we continuously adjust and look for that added value? But if these organizations aren't on board full wholeheartedly with that a transformation means an investment in their people, in their process, and their technologies, and the whole thing, I don't know what we're really doing together, right? Because it will always then only be superficial, right? It will be, oh, we get this nice fancy tool, right? But it doesn't go anywhere with it, or the adoption doesn't get there, and they don't get their ROI that they even think about. Even when you're talking about these 47, you know, the new tools out there, we see that a lot too, them implementing some of these new project management tools, which are great, but it's everything that comes after implementation, I guess, is my point, right? And typically the role of a PM is during some implementation, right? And I think of it a little bit more holistically, and I suspect you do as well, right? There's an ongoing program associated to those tools that are getting implemented. It's not just a discrete task.
Yeah, absolutely right. And how it fits within the organization is critical. You know, I'm sure you've seen some of your clients, they've implemented a project or a program, but another group within the organization would benefit as well. They either didn't know or didn't have the funding, and there wasn't the sponsorship at a high level to make that, that dream become a reality. I think project management within the industry is what you put into it. And, you know, another best practice that's so often overlooked is a lessons learned review. So we did all this great work. Project is done. Let's spend 90 minutes talking about what went well, what didn't go well, and what we would change moving forward. And how valuable it is for the executive sponsor, the CEO, you know, whoever's in charge at the organization, to have a repository of lessons learned from the last 12 months or the last 5 years. I think that's invaluable as an organization grows to kind of keep a history, but also just to get better for the next project. I did a lessons learned a few weeks ago and the team had never done one and they were thrilled. They said, this is great. We're going to pull this out on you know,
September right. It doesn't 5th. Have to be fancy at all. It's just literally what you said. What what didn't work well? What are we going to do moving forward? That's it. Three questions to ask everyone. Right. You get some input more than others, but it also gives folks a chance to articulate, you know, that again, back to our beginning of our conversation, learning styles are different, right? Not everything works the same way for everyone. And if they don't have a chance to communicate that back in a feedback loop, there is no chance for change.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And that upfront planning is critical. And, you know, one aspect that I haven't seen a whole lot of recently is the formal gate review process, right? When there's funding in place for these large initiatives, a gate review, either technical or financial or both, to say, let's make sure that before we proceed with this money, this time, this effort, that the VP of this area plus his supporting functions all sit down in a room and approve it. And that gate review is on our schedule. And so we're tracking to it and we're getting all those things done to it. And so it's really taken a comprehensive overall look at, you know, the company's approach to managing projects and programs that I think is critical. Project management to me isn't just someone that you hire for an individual group. It's how do you manage the company from a programmatic standpoint? Because a lot of the principles that make sense for a simple $10,000 project that lasts 3 weeks, really do apply for a company that is, you know, could be a multi-billion-dollar company.
Yeah. Well, Steve, it's been a pleasure chatting with you. Can you leave our audience with like one or two key nuggets that you wanted to make sure that we reiterate what's important?
Yeah. I would say, you know, if you're in a role to hire project managers, please think outside the box. Folks from other industries may be really looking to get into life sciences and may have a unique perspective on project management that can really add value to your organization. I was one of those individuals about 10 years ago. I caught a break and landed a role at a life science company, and I've been the beneficiary of that, and hopefully my clients have as well. So I'd say if you're in a hiring role, please think outside the box for those resumes that come in from other industries. And if you're standing up a project management organization, I'd say, you know, think big. Make sure it's the best practices that you're going to apply to your organization are going to, you know, transmit throughout the organization. And think if you're going to be in a functional role versus, you know, delivering the projects, all that is critical as you set up the team. So hopefully that is useful to all of you listening today.
Great. Well, tell us, how can we find you?
Yeah. Thanks for asking. Company that I lead is Mustard Seed. We have a website, www.mustardseedpmo.com. And you can always reach out to me. It's steve@mustardseedpmo.com.
Awesome. Great, Steve. Well, thanks so much for a lovely conversation today.
Thanks, Dory. Appreciate the time.
All right. Take care.
Have a good one.
Thanks for listening to Software Quality Today. If you like what you just heard, we hope you pass along our web address, procellarx.co, to your friends and colleagues. And please leave us a positive review on iTunes. Be sure to check out our previous podcasts and check us out on LinkedIn at ProcellarX. Join us next time for another edition of Software Quality Today.